Okay, so I'm going to talk today about Omega Columbia torsors. And I think this is going to end up being a multi-part talk. So, anything having to do with elliptic Calabi-Yau manifolds has some application to physics. That's kind of why we're doing them, the application to string theory ideas. And here the application is to what's called F-theory, which almost all of you have heard me say something about before. And let me just briefly say what the issue is that this is going to be able to address in F-theory, but once I've said that, it's actually going to turn into pretty much pure algebraic geometry talk. So the application of F-theory goes like this. From an elliptic Calabi-Yau variety, there's something known as a Weierstrass model or a Weierstrass equation, which is something that we'll discuss today. So you write a birational model for the Calabi-Yau just in this form, where F and G are sections of appropriate length that you write. So this is elliptic Calabi-Yau variety means it's X to B, and the general fiber, pi inverse of B, is an elliptic curve for general B. So F and G are sections of appropriate line bundles on the base capital B. And so this equation defines a hypersurface contained in, the way I've written it, it's an affine equation. So it's contained in the direct sum of two particular line bundles, the ones for which X and Y are sections. So it's kind of the total space of that guy over B. But we actually think of it as being compactified into the projectivization of a sum of three line bundles, the other one being trivial, sitting over B. So we get some compact complex variety or projective algebraic variety which fibers in some way over B from this Weierstrass model. And now the data of the Weierstrass model is used in physics for these F-theory compactifications. And one of the interesting things that happens in the physical model, so the F-theory compactification, I should give so all of my varieties I'm working over the complex numbers. I need to say that since I'm teaching a class in algebraic geometry where it's not always over the complex numbers. And X has a dimension, again, over the complex numbers, which I'll say is D. So in physics, this produces a model in 10 minus 2D dimensions. So the only cases of interest really are going to be D up through, you could do D equal 5 and produce a zero-dimensional model with no space or time. That's a little strange, but D up through 4 is interesting. The dimension of X is D plus 1, and the dimension of B is D. Sorry about that. I get this theory in 10 minus 2D dimensions, and if I put the theory on a space of the form S1 cross, so the total dimension was 10 minus 2D, one of those was time, and I'm using one of the spatial dimensions to be a circle, then I'm supposed to get a physical theory in 9 minus 2D dimensions, which is related to X. So here we have another physical construction called M-theory compactified on X. Now, there are additional parameters which show up when you're describing X as opposed to just the Weierstrass equations. And one of those parameters, which is really hard to determine for the physical application, is if there are any discrete gate symmetries in the F-theory model. And you would learn about these by having more than one X, which was available for compactification in M-theory. So if there are multiple x's, x1 through xk, with the same f and g, then the F theory for F and G has a discrete symmetry of order k. So that's the mathematical problem we're going to try to study. Kolobiow, right? They were Kolobiow. So the canonical bundle is trivial. That's one way of saying it. Determine what are all the Kolobiow varieties with a fixed F and G Weierstrass model in order to determine what the discrete symmetries might be in F theory. And the answer is simply they're torsors for the elliptic structure on the Kolobiow, so I have to explain what that means, but that's what the title means. The title is sort of describing this situation that I've just indicated. So one of the remarkable things is that in physics expects the set of discrete choices to be a group, and that's one of the reasons it's called a symmetry, and the mathematical construction actually puts a group structure on the set of choices in a natural way. So it's a nice indication that the right kind of thing is being done. Okay, so this is my basic problem. I'm looking at elliptic Kolobiow varieties and trying to find out how much variation there is in Weierstrass models. So one issue has to do with the birational geometry of X. And I'm not considering as distinct X's which are birational to each other. So let me try to say a few words about the birational geometry of X. So what is a Kolobiow variety? Kolobiow variety is one for which the canonical bundle is trivial. That's one way of saying it. The dualizing sheaf, isomorphic to the structure sheaf, is an equivalent way of saying it. There exists a nowhere vanishing holomorphic D plus 1 form. Is a way of saying it that's sort of resonates with complex analytic geometry. On the other hand, sort of motivated by modern developments in algebraic geometry over the last 20 years, the other condition I want to put on X is that X should be what's called a Mori minimal model. And so being a Mori minimal model means that only certain mild singularities are allowed. And at some point, we'll have to be precise about that. And then it's also supposed to be true that if you take any algebraic curve, C on X, then the degree of omega x restricted to C is supposed to be zero. Okay, well, omega x isomorphic to Ox is an even stronger condition than that. Greater than or equal to zero. We're taking omega x equals the structure sheaf. The degree of the structure sheaf restricted to the curve is equal to zero, and so that's automatically satisfied when we impose this Kolobiow condition. But so the main thing that's coming from this minimal model theory is that we're going to be allowing some mild singularities. So I want to make a distinction between, I want to introduce a bit of terminology which is often used by often used in the number theory community, and I want to say that pi is a genus 1 vibration. The genus of the inverse image of B is equal to 1 for general B, So what do I mean by general B? All B which are not in a particular Zariski closed subset of the base. And actually, we'll be very precise about that Zariski closed subset in a little bit. So it's a genus 1 fibration if that's true. And pi is an elliptic fibration. If there is a rational section, so a rational section is going to be a subvariety of X with the property that the induced map is birational, or rather, I should say, S, the degree of O pi inverse B of S is equal to 1 for B general. And that implies that this map, induced map from S to B, is generically 1 to 1. And onto. So the reason for the distinction of the language, the distinction between a genus 1 curve and an elliptic curve, is a distinction that arises in number theory, where they also study curves of this kind. They're going to study them over fields. And in fact, we get a curve over a field from our basic setup just by passing to the function field of the base. So this determines an algebraic curve of genus 1 over capital K, which is the function field of the base, rational functions of the base. And here I get an elliptic curve, which means curve of genus 1 with a point. Again, over K. So, what's the distinction that I'm making here? I'll give examples from the number, an example from the number theoretic context. So, not really the case I'm looking at, but if K was Q, then here's a nice genus 1 curve that I could write down. Well, this is an affine piece of the genus 1 curve. To really make it into a complete curve, I should take y squared equals x to the fourth plus 2z to the fourth and regard that, maybe put a minus sign here, look at the variety defined by that in a so-called weighted projective space, x, y, z, with weights 1, 2, and 1. That makes it into a compact curve, a complete curve. But anyway, we sort of implicitly understand that we're going to compactify. And this genus 1 curve has no Q rational point. I can at least show you that there's no Q rational point with y equals 0. If you had a Q rational point with y equals 0, you would have a root over Q of x to the fourth plus 2. And anyway, we don't, so there's no Q rational point. This curve, so that's a genus 1 curve C, this curve has a Jacobian, which I'll define in general in a minute. J of C, and the Jacobian I'm going to write as y squared is equal to a cubic, and it turns out to be precisely this one, y squared equals x cubed minus 8x. This does have a rational point. 0, 0, well, right. So this one, this has several rational points. Let me just say that. So there's a general procedure to take a genus 1 curve defined over an arbitrary field and produce another genus 1 curve defined over the same field that also has a point. And these two curves are closely related to each other. There's a map from one to the other there's a map from one to the other if you choose a point, sorry. But they're closely related, and this is the basic thing that's going to be, right. Yeah, this is where I want to say what torsor means. So J of C is a group, so elliptic curves equipped with points have a group law associated to them, and the group J of C, or the group scheme, if you like, J of C acts on C. So there's a natural action from J of C cross C to C. That's the natural geometric structure you have. And this makes C into a what's called either a principal homogeneous space or torsor, which is a word borrowed from French, over the Jacobian. Okay, so here's my program. I start with one of my elliptic collabiales, excuse me, genus 1 fibered collabial over some base. I'll consider it as a genus 1 curve over the function field of the base. I'll construct this Jacobian. I want to check that the Jacobian has a realization back here as an elliptic fibration over the same base, and that's sort of part of the work that has to be done. And then the torsor question becomes the question, if I have one of these elliptic fibrations, how many genus 1 fibrations can I find which have the same Jacobian? And then what will be true is that the Jacobian will always act, at least birationally act, on the total space of the elliptic fibration. So that's sort of the program, and it's related to this maneuver in number theory. Is pretty common to look for genus 1 curves that are twists, so-called, of the elliptic curve that you start out with. And we're going to adapt some of the terminology, and the results in number theory, if proved carefully, apply over arbitrary fields. And so we'll adapt some of those results to try to attack this problem. Any questions so far?
Is C genus 1?
So if you have a curve of higher genus and you take its Jacobian, then you get an abelian variety of some dimension. It no longer exactly acts on the curve.
So it won't
be a torsor anymore.
Okay.
So how do I go from elliptic curve over C, excuse me, over K, to Weierstrass model? That's sort of one of the fundamental things that I imply here, is that if I have an elliptic curve, something that has one of these rational sections, that's what S is called, a rational section, then there will be an associated Weierstrass model. So it would be nice to know how to construct that. So here I have, I'm going to use E for the elliptic curve, containing a point. We're working over field. And so there's a natural line bundle on this elliptic curve, which is just O of P, O of the point. The point is thought of as a divisor on this elliptic curve, and there's always a line bundle associated to a divisor. And in fact, I'm going to be considering the line bundles associated to multiples of that point, OE of NP. And there's a beautiful theorem in algebraic geometry called the Riemann-Roch theorem, which works even in this context. The Riemann-Roch theorem tells me that the dimension of the global sections of OE of NT. Well, in the Riemann-Roch theorem, there's an error term, but one thing that you could show for a curve of genus 1 is that that error term vanishes. So I get a precise formula for the dimension. N is the degree of the line bundle, which is the multiple of the point that I took, minus the genus of the curve, plus 1. So it's exactly equal to N. So now you play the following game, which is a very fun game. So if I look at the global sections of OE of P, there is a single global section. In fact, this is since it's a line bundle, I can find some Zariski open set where it's trivialized, and I can take the trivializing section for the line bundle on that Zariski open set. And one of the conventions for naming that trivializing section is to call it 1, because we're thinking of it as a function, a rational function on the base. So I'm going to call this the generating section 1, and that trivializes the line bundle, OE of P, on the complement of the point P, which is where something interesting is happening for this bundle, but anyway, away from the point P. I have a completely non-vanishing section, and I'll just call it 1. So that tells me that if I take OE of 2P, okay, so here I'm going to call it 1 squared, just to indicate that I really did put it into this line bundle. So there's a natural multiplication map, right, from O of NP times O of MP to O of N plus MP. So I've got 1 squared, and I need another one because the dimension is 2. So I'll just make an arbitrary choice and call it X. So that's a section, the second section of OE of 2P. OE of 3P now contains 1 cubed and 1 times X. And I need another one, which is going to be called Y. I'll stop in just a minute. OE of 4P contains 1 to the 4th, 1 squared X, 1 times y, and x squared. Okay? So here y was another arbitrary choice. I needed a third section. You might worry about whether these are linearly independent, and there's some lemmas which tell you that, in fact, the given sections that you have are linearly independent. 5p, same thing. They're linearly independent. 1 to the 5th, 1 cubed x, 1 squared y, 1 x squared, and xy. Those are all of the degree 5 expressions I can generate out of the things I've chosen so far. And then I get to degree 6. So in degree 6, I have 1 to the 6th, 1 to the 4th x, 1, yeah, thank you. 1 cubed y, 1 squared x squared, 1 xy, and 2 new guys. In degree 6, I have x cubed and also y squared. So already from the sections I know about, I have more sections than are needed to generate this space. This is a six-dimensional space, but I have 7 sections. And so there has to be a relation. There's a slight refinement of this story in which you take advantage of the fact that there is an isomorphism between the dualizing sheaf of E and OE, using that slight refinement shows that so I'm going to write it as an equation, shows that the coefficients in this equation of y squared and x cubed can be taken to be 1 and minus 1, the way I'm going to normalize it. That's not completely obvious. What is obvious is that if I had a coefficient here and another coefficient here, then if I multiplied the equation, say, by, lambda cubed divided by mu squared or something like that, lambda cubed times mu squared. If I multiply the equation by that, right, so here I would have lambda mu squared y squared, and then over here I would have mu squared lambda cubed times this, So that would be mu lambda x cubed. So up to the fact that the mu and lambda might have zero someplace, which could mess this up. Roughly speaking, I could get rid of any coefficients that I had there. But by keeping track of this, which I'm not going to try to do, I can actually assume that I've got these coefficients. And then I just give names to the other coefficients, and I'll give them subscripts to indicate what bundle they sort of belong to. And I'm going to drop the ones, which are just a pain. So I get minus a1xy, minus a3. I guess what's happening is that the a's are taking sections in, they're like multiples of the ones or something, and so the number of ones tells you the subscript on the a, plus x cubed plus a2x squared plus a4x plus a6. So there has to be an equation like that. Now, if the characteristic of the field K is not equal to 2 or 3, then I can do the following trick. First, I complete the square on Y. And I end up with some slightly messy looking thing. A4 plus a half A1A3 x, and then A6 plus a quarter A3 squared. So I got rid of the other terms involving y, and then I can, is it minus? Plus. Still correct as written, it's correct as written. And then I can complete the cube on y, on x rather, and I'm not going to write this formula for you, but I'm going to tell you how it starts. It starts x plus a third a2 plus a 12th a1 squared cubed. And that has the effect of producing this term for the x squared. And then I have some coefficient of degree 4 times this guy, which you can work out as a function of everybody else. And then I have some coefficient of degree 6 called f and g. So with respect to new variables, and let me just call them capital Y and capital X for a moment. And by the way, what am I doing? Effectively, I'm changing Y by a multiple of X and a constant, and I'm changing X by a constant. And my choices of X and Y were pretty arbitrary to begin with. I just wanted to complete this basis. So I'm shifting X by one of these, I'm shifting Y by some of these, and ending up with a better basis in which the equation has this nice form. And that works over any field. If I work over a ring instead of over a field, say the affine coordinate, one of the affine coordinate rings on my base, B, I can do a little bit better than this. Yeah, let me just point out before I switch to rings that I still have the possibility of taking X and Y and multiplying X by the square of a unit, multiplying Y by the cube of the same unit, and then multiplying the equation by u to the minus 6, right? So if I did u to the minus 6 times minus u cubed y squared plus u squared x cubed plus f4 u squared x plus g6, what I would get would be another equation of the same form. So the u to the 6s cancel out. But I end up with u to the minus 4 f4 and u to the minus 6 g6. So I can change, without modifying the equation, I can change by something which is invertible, where I would multiply the fourth power of that by f4 and the sixth power by g6. Okay. So aside from dualizing sheaf and Riemann-Roch theorem, I think the people in my course ought to have understood most of the work. Riemann-Roch theorem you've probably heard of, dualizing sheaf, maybe not, but okay, so now I want to work over a ring. So I want to think of K as containing some ring, maybe just call it O, and in the application, typically O will be the coordinate ring for some open set U and B. I can do this construction that I'm about to do on various open sets. Maybe I can do it on one open set and then kind of look at the closure. B typically is going to be a projective variety. It's not too hard to figure out how to put things together, so let me just focus on one open set. So the coefficients F4 and G6 are elements of K, and so choosing an appropriate U from the maybe choosing a U such that U inverse is in the integer guys, then I can assume that the fourth power of this guy times F and the sixth power of this guy times G are also in the ring. This was the fractional ring, and so I'm just clearing denominators by this. So, and I can make a change of variables using that particular U. So what that means is, without loss of generality, I can start assuming that my F and my G are contained in O. And now the question is there a possibility of dividing by something that's in O? So if there now exists, and just to not get confused with this one, I'll call it V in O, with the property that V to the fourth divides F4 and V to the sixth divides G6, then we can change coordinates as before and send our F4 G6 to F4 divided by V to the fourth and G6 divided by V to the sixth. So I should have some Noetherian hypotheses someplace, but under appropriate Noetherian finiteness type hypotheses, there's a little lemma, which is there exist F4 and G6, which are not such that if V to the 4 divides F4 and V to the 6 divides G6, then V4 and V6 are units in O. And when I have such a thing, it's called a Weierstrass minimal model. One of the problems in discussing this part of the subject is that a long time ago, people introduced the term minimal model for this construction in Weierstrass equations. And then much more recently, people introduced the term minimal model in the birational geometry of algebraic varieties. And we need to talk about both of those things. Moreover, passing to a Weierstrass minimal model is a birational change on the total space of the fibration. So it's very, very confusing. And that's why I'm trying to single out Mori minimal model than Weierstrass minimal model. So over some open set B, I have F4 and G6, which are functions on the open set U, and I'm building my Weierstrass elliptic fibration by an equation like this. So it's the zeros of an equation like this, which, again, we can think of as being in the total space of, well, at the moment, it's just two copies of OU, because I'm kind of not paying attention to how the line bundle behaves, but, sorry, over U. But as you can well imagine, when you move from coordinate chart to coordinate chart, you may well have to use a transition function to correct for extra zeros or poles that might have shown up in F4 or G6 when you move to the other coordinate chart. So the upshot of all of that is that there is essentially one line bundle whose transition functions are given by the V's that you would need, And then F4 is a section of the fourth power of that line bundle, and G6 is a section of the sixth power of that line bundle. So the slightly more global form over a B that isn't necessarily affine is that I have a line bundle L over B, and then my F and G can be thought of as belonging to L to the tensor 4. So F is a section of L to the tensor 4, and G is a section of L to the tensor 6. And similarly, I should think of X as being a section of L to the tensor 2, and Y as being a section of L to the tensor 3. And then the equation that I'm writing down is an equation that holds among sections of the sixth power of my line bundle. If you want to projectivize, one of the standard ways of projectivizing is to take this equation and introduce another variable z and keep track of the sort of mod 6 degree business going on like this, give x, y, and z different weights. And if you do that, you end up producing a projective guy inside of the projectivization of trivial plus L to the 4, excuse me, L to the 2 plus L to the 3, which is a bundle over the base B. So this is how we start from, we started from an arbitrary elliptic curve over, say, B, right, an elliptic vibration over B, but by passing to the quotient, the field of fractions of the coordinate ring of an open set, we got something over a field, and then we kind of reconstructed a global model, but one which had a very particular equation out of this information. So this is a model of X, which I'm going to call W. So the, this is W, the Weierstrass model. And the point is that W over B is birational to X over B, the original X over B. So what does that mean? What that means is that there is a generically defined morphism as schemes over B. So it'll be defined on some open set, and it'll be an isomorphism between two Zariski open sets of this guy, which lie over some Zariski open set of B. But because of the possibility of having to, you know, multiply and divide by various U's and V's here, there can be changes happening over some divisors on the base B where those U's and V's might have vanished. So I can't guarantee that my original one is exactly equal to it, but I can say that it's birational to it. And actually the map is going to go this way. And the reason the map goes this way is that I built this out of sections of certain line bundles on X, and so you get a map to the corresponding projective space out of sections of the line bundles on X. Any questions? Okay. So now I want to switch to Y for a few minutes. So I want Y over B to be a genus 1 vibration. And I want to explain the basic construction for a vibration over B, which will essentially replicate the Jacobian story. Before I do that, I should tell you how the Jacobian works over a field. Let me do that. So I take C is a genus 1 curve. Forgot to do that. Over K. So J of C is the set of line bundles of degree 0. On C. And I'm writing it as a set, but it's actually the Picard scheme. It has a natural scheme structure of C. It's the set of line bundles of degree 0 on C. And there is a distinguished line bundle of degree 0 namely OC. So the structure sheaf gives me a line bundle of degree zero. It's the only trivial line bundle of degree zero, globally trivial. So that's a point here. That's the marked point, which makes it into an elliptic curve. So this is the data of an elliptic curve. And how does the action go? If you have a line bundle and a point, then you write L tensor OP. By the Riemann-Roch theorem, it turns out that L tensor OP always takes the form of OQ for some point Q. So if I have a degree zero line bundle and multiply it by the standard degree one line bundle associated to the point, I get another degree one line bundle, and all of those are associated to points on Q. So that's how I get an action of the Jacobian on the guy. And by the way, the group law from this perspective is just tensor product. I should have mentioned that if I have L1 and L2, maybe I'll write them as classes in the Jacobian, then L1 tensor L2 is their product in the group law on the corresponding elliptic curve. So for some applications, it's really nice to have these formulas for the geometric group law. You can write down explicit formulas in terms of lines passing through points, fun things like that. I won't do that today. If I need it sometime later, if I give another talk or two about this, I may bring it back. So I would now like to do this in families, not just over the function field. And I want to do it in a way that lets me somehow keep control of the geometry. So now I'm going to take y over b, which is a genus 1 vibration. And I want to modify y birationally. And I'll be modifying b as well into a form in which the Jacobian of y can be easily defined. In fact, in the form that we're going to arrive at, there's also, so also in this form, what we're going to find is a formula which tells you the dualizing sheaf of y as the pullback of the dualizing sheaf of b tensored with some divisor on the base that I'm going to call capital lambda. Except that this formula is slightly unusual in that this guy will have Q coefficients. But it turns out that allowing divisors with Q coefficients is one of the key insights in the Mori minimal model program. And in some sense, the fact that you needed those Q coefficients in this formula was one of the historical things that made people realize that this is what was going on in the Mori minimal model program. So when written in terms of divisors, this would say Ky is the pullback of Kb plus lambda. And it turns out that the denominators in those Q coefficients are all divisors of 12, so you get a very precise statement that 12Ky, which is actually an integral divisor, is the pullback of 12Kb plus 12 lambda, and this turns out to be an actual divisor with integer coefficients. So anyway, when we get there, I think we'll have some, we'll understand where the 12 came from in that formula. So I'm going to have a form in which the Jacobian can be easily defined. The Jacobian, in this case, will also take that same form, and we'll see that there is a close relation between the lambda of the original and the lambda of the Jacobian. There's a small difference, but it's something that we can easily write down and understand. And we'd like to get back to our original y. And so after obtaining this nice form y tilde, and it's Jacobian, and maybe that's over b tilde because b also changed, we want to reverse the process. Okay, so modified birationally. Modified birationally means, i.e., blow up the base and the fiber. So I have to tell you what blowing up means, but it's some very particular kind of birational change of these guys. And what I'd like to do, to whatever extent I can, is blow back down. And I'll blow back down, maybe not to exactly the y I started out with, but to some very close cousin of the y that I started out with, and the Jacobian of that guy, over the same b bar. It turns out, so I want y bar to be a minimal model of my original y. Turns out that this is not quite a minimal model, but it's got a closely related minimal model, Jacobian prime of y over b prime, which maps to b bar. And then this guy has a Weierstrass model. It maps to its Weierstrass model over the same b prime. So starting from a genus 1 fibration y, I'm going to get basically three things. A minimal model for y, which I will arrive at by first blowing up to get to this nice form where I can easily match what's going on with these two guys, and then blow down carefully where I keep track of the canonical bundle formula and everything that happens as I blow down. These are isomorphic. Then I'll have my two genus 1 fibrations over B bar. Y bar will be a minimal model of Y, but its Jacobian won't be a minimal model. You need some blowing up in order to have a minimal model there, and then that minimal model has a Weierstrass model. So these are the kind of ingredients. And canonical bundle trivial means that I want Ky to be 0. That turns out to mean that I want Ky bar to be 0. And among other things, we'll show that that implies that the Jacobian has trivial canonical bundle, and the Weierstrass model is the data that we need for F-theory. And the hard part of this, the part that's solved with an abstract theorem, but there's not a good computational technique for, is to figure out, given the Jacobian, say the J prime of Y model, what are all the possible Y bars that can occur. So that's the elliptic Calabi-Yau-Torser problem that I discussed. Okay, so I sketched a program. This program is easy in dimension. If Y has dimension 2, B has dimension 1. It's done if Y has dimension 3 and B has dimension 2. It's not done if Y has dimension 4 and B has dimension 3, and it desperately needs to be done. And so I'll sort of sketch parts of it, and we'll see what the open parts are, and maybe some group of us will attack this problem and solve it. That would be nice. And then the sort of last step of figuring out how to go backwards is even, I mean, as I said, there's some theorems in dimension 3, but it's very hard to actually make the computation in explicit examples. So I should mention that the program that I'm discussing for threefolds was worked out about 20 years ago by Antonella Grassi, Mark Gross, and Lomachev Gross for some parts of it. And in for y of dimension 4, Grassi has also some partial results, which are not published about this. But there's still things to be done for the complete program. So actually, let's have an example. And so there are two examples that I've encountered in work with physicists over the last couple of years, which kind of changed my whole perspective about this problem. So, the fact that you need elliptic Calabi-Yau-Torsers, I wasn't using that language, but I've known for a long time that that was exactly what you needed to do. 25 years ago, these papers are. So about 20 years ago, I understood that that was exactly what you needed to do in order to understand these discrete degrees of freedom in F-theory. But I was not aware, for example, that the Jacobian of a minimal model was not itself a minimal model. So this was a sort of surprise to me recently, and the examples sort of show why. So the most recent example, which is in a paper of mine So this is me plus six others, and it came out in December, I think, which would make it 1512 something. And this example is not exactly in that paper. This is a global version of that example. So here's the example. I start with an x hat over P2. And I want to choose it with a point of order 3. So one thing which I didn't really stress is in this Weierstrass model, if I use the XYZ version of the Weierstrass model, and let me drop the coefficient there, don't really need it. If I use this XYZ version, then the origin of the group law, the section that we're talking about, is at 0, 1, 0. So it's x equals z equals 0, and y is equal to It says z equals 0. Okay, so to write it that way, I guess I have to homogenize in a different form. To write it this way, minus y squared z, make it all cubic. So that is 0, 1, 0. So that's the natural 0 section. But I want an additional point of order 3. And it turns out that it is pretty well known how to realize this. I restrict the form of my Weierstrass equation, not by completing the square and completing the cube, but I'm going to restrict it to a special form that looks like this, where I only consider two non-zero coefficients, and they both go on the left-hand side of the equation. They both go with the y, and now I'm actually labeling them according to the degree in S, T, and U. So here I have homogeneous coordinates S, T, and U, and this is supposed to be cubic in S, T, and U, and this is supposed to be degree 9 in S, T, and U. And I want to choose A3 and A9 to be invariant under the projective transformation that takes S, T, U to omega S, omega inverse T, U, where omega is a primitive third root of unity. And so that means that their functions, A3 and A9, are functions of the primitive invariants for that operation, which are S cubed, T cubed, U cubed, and STU. So I have functions of degrees 3 and 9, which just depend on those expressions. So the degree 3 one's easy to write down, you just have four coefficients. Degree 9, you have to take all the degree 9 combinations that you can get out of that guy. So there is a Z3 action on x hat. There's a Z3 action on P2, and it lists to an action on x hat, which fixes the 0 section. The guy that's called 0, 1, 0 in my projective coordinates. But there's a second Z3 action . So let me call the first one alpha. This to an action alpha on x. There's a second one which I can think of as doing alpha and then doing translation in the group law by the chosen point of order 3. This, the 0, 0, that's a solution of this. So that, it does turn out, the way I've constructed this guy, that always turns out to be order 3. And so I have these two different Z3 actions. And if I take x hat mod beta, there is no section. So that maps to P2 mod Z3. And this does not have a section because of the translation. I destroyed the section. So that's one of my genus 1 vibrations. So that's a genus 1 fibered Calabi-Yau. And if I take x hat mod alpha, that's the Jacobian, it turns out, of x hat mod beta. Still lives over p2 mod z3. And this one is non-singular. It's easy to see that it's non-singular because I did this translation by a point of order 3, and that means that there were no fixed points for the group law for the action whatsoever, right? I have this action on the base, but I also translated in the fiber, and because of the translation in the fiber, there are no fixed points. In fact, pi 1 of x hat mod b is z3, right? I've taken a fixed point free action of z3. But in this case, there were fixed points. So here, it's actually singular over the fixed points, the images of the fixed points, on p2 mod z3. And so there's a desingularization, which you get by blowing up p2 mod z3. Has four singular points, three singular points. You take the blow up of the singular points, and then you pull back and get the model of the Jacobian fibration, and that's a non-singular guy over this thing. So this is what I meant. Sorry, I guess I called it prime. That you typically need to do a little bit of blowing up here to get this model here. Okay, so I think I've laid out the problem. I've kind of indicated that we're going to need to do birational geometry. I've shown you how it works in one example, and my hour is up, so perhaps part two, I will get into some of the details of how you make that good form that I mentioned, how you relate the canonical bundle upstairs and downstairs, how you compute something about this group of torsors in the good form, and see if I can get through the rest of the story in another hour. So next week, I can't do it, but I'll continue 2 weeks from today. Any questions?
What do you mean translation by 0, 0?
I should make that more clear. So here, I have a particular point. So I have 0, 1, 0, which is the point at infinity. Let me homogenize this one to cubics as well. And then I have the point, so 0, 1, 0 was the origin of the group law, and then 0, 0, 1 is a point of order 3 on the elliptic curve. So if you draw the elliptic curve, right, and you have a point, that's bad because that's not an elliptic curve. Slightly a better job. So we need this. We need to do something about the geometric group law. There, got a better chance. We need to do something about the geometric group law. So the geometric group law, so I'm calling this one 0, 0, and my point of infinity is outside of this plane. It's in the projectivization of the plane. So the geometric group law says if you want to double a point, you take the tangent line to the point and take the third point of intersection, and then you take the other point with the same x-coordinate. So you change the y-coordinate. So that would be 2p. And then if it's really a point of order 3, then 2p is supposed to be, if you add it to p, you're supposed to get, the 2p is supposed to be negative p, and negative p is supposed to be this guy down here. So somehow that's a condition on this geometry to make a negative p. And I cleverly constructed this guy so that the condition on the geometry will be satisfied. So this is a point of order 3. And now if I want to translate, I take an arbitrary point q, join it to p, find the third point of intersection, take the opposite of that guy, that's the translation. So that's some algebraic formula on x and y, which depends on a3 and a9. Has some denominators in it, so it's only a birational map, but then it turns out, if you're careful, that the denominators didn't matter, and that's the translation. Yes?
Can you explain the example is just an elliptic curve.
X hat is the family defined by this, it's this family of elliptic curves, where I've chosen A3 and A9 as homogeneous polynomials in three variables of degrees 3 and 9 invariant under the Z3. So it's the total space of this guy. I call it X hat because it's not really my X yet. I have to take the quotient to get the X that I... In my notes it said X hat, but I was using Y. So this is actually what I would have been calling Y. So maybe I should call it Y hat right here. All right.